good afternoon. We have today with us at the Institute of South Asian Studies discussion a very distinguished expert, Professor Razin Sally from the LKY School of Public Policy at the National University of Singapore. Professor Sally is not just an economist focusing on trade and international political economy issues for a number of years. He's also a distinguished scholar on Sri Lanka. And it is Sri Lanka that we are going to talk about today. And on Sri Lanka, we are going to begin our conversation with Professor Sally on the book that he has just written. The book is titled very mystically, Return to Sri Lanka, Travels in a Paradoxical Island. And the book has just been published. It's available in South Asia among the South Asian audiences. And the book comes at a time when Sri Lanka has just concluded its general elections. There's a new government which has taken charge. Probably the faces are not new, but the government is new. So maybe we will start this conversation by asking Professor Sally that in the book that he has written, how does he connect the main messages or the main observations or feelings captured in this book with the current scenario in Sri Lanka, the political and the social scenario? Please, Razin.
Thank you. Thank you, Amitendu. Well, I grew up in Sri Lanka until I was about 12. Then there was a long absence. And then I started coming back frequently and traveling around the island in my 40s. And I wanted to write a book about Sri Lanka as a way of getting to know Sri Lanka better, discovering it afresh. But I thought writing about it as a specialist on economics, politics, or what have you, something I'd done before on other subjects, was not really going to get at what I wanted to get at. I'd always wanted to write a travel book. So what I did was combine my childhood experiences and my family background in Sri Lanka with the journeys I did when I came back in middle age, and use that memoir and the travel experience as ways of telling broader stories about the Sri Lankan condition. And the historical background, of course, but I suppose more proximately the Sri Lankan temper or condition in the 10 years after the end of the Civil War, which is when I did my journeys around the island and when I had prolonged stays in Colombo. So it's a much freer form of writing.
Right.
And that's the way I try and tell the bigger Sri Lankan story.
Wonderful. And Razin, you would know probably better than anybody else who looks closely at Sri Lanka and its domestic developments, the kind of issues it encounters as an economy, as a society. One of the major thoughts that's been coming out before the current elections as well as subsequently after the elections is the fact that Sri Lanka faces a rather difficult and grave macroeconomic situation. And this is something which requires, as they say, desperate conditions probably require desperate remedies. But what, in your view, could be the way forward for Sri Lanka? And what exactly are the top priorities from a macroeconomic perspective that you might want the government to address?
Well, the first priority is macroeconomic stability,
right.
Which means tackling debt principal and debt servicing problems, given that an increasing share of Sri Lanka's debt is external, and of that external debt, an increasing share is borrowed from international capital markets on a non-concessional basis. So to begin with, Sri Lanka has to stick to the targets agreed with the IMF in the extended fund facility, but it needs to reach more medium term beyond that. But to do that sustainably, of course, Sri Lanka needs to put its fiscal house in order, which it has failed to do practically since independence. So this is, I think, the biggest political economy problem Sri Lanka has had going back to the 1950s. Spending that much more than it earns, than it receives, particularly from a rather low tax take, 10 to 15% of GDP, and creating lots of extra spending entitlements in successive budgets and in successive election cycles. So that's got to be arrested and reversed in order to tackle the debt issue sustainably. So I think that's the first priority, but Sri Lanka has never actually managed to get there,
right,
even in the days of significant liberalization in the 80s and 90s. Sri Lanka still failed to bring about macroeconomic stability, and then, of course, a vicious cycle set in.
Right.
Balance of payments problems with twin deficits, a current account deficit under control, and then import controls and tax surcharges in order to tackle that problem. So that's, I think, the first priority.
Right. Looking at it a little bit more closely, Rasin, I think there has been this very popular narrative, and which is essentially coming out of a geopolitical, geostrategic analysis of developments involving Sri Lanka, that Sri Lanka's growing engagement with China has been reflected by most as a matter of increasing concern depending upon the perspective that one adopts in looking at it. It's probably a concern from Sri Lanka's own national interest perspective, because it is arguably having to give up a fair bit of strategic autonomy for accepting the kind of conditions that the Chinese have in their various investments. There is also a particular degree of concern that has been expressed over growing Chinese influence in the region around Sri Lanka and what that means for the regional order. Now, I wanted to check your reaction to these particular set of perspectives, and whether you think that this particular government, which is now headed by the Rajapaksas, and who originally were those political leaders who did actually start cultivating a fairly deep degree of relationship with China, do you think that the fact that they're now back in office would see, and not just because of them, but also because of the circumstances they inherit, Sri Lanka developing a much deeper organic economic and political relationship with China?
Yes, is the short answer to your question. I think it's a combination of that personal connection between the Rajapaksas, Mahinda Rajapaksa in the first instance, and now Gotabaya Rajapaksa as president, with the Chinese state, developed when they were last in power. And as you put it, you know, circumstances.
Yeah.
Let's not forget that China remained first foreign policy friend of Sri Lanka, even under the last government.
That's true.
The projects that were suspended for a year were restored. The Hambantota deal went through. Money talks and numbers count.
Right.
So China is really the only big foreign investment game in town. That's not the fault of the Chinese. That's the fault of successive Sri Lankan governments not creating the right conditions for good Indian investors and good Western investors to come to Sri Lanka and insert Sri Lanka into global supply chains.
Sure.
And, of course, some of the debt created, I mean, still a relatively small amount, is in the form of Chinese loans. The big projects are mainly Chinese. So that's happening anyway. I expect that to be reinforced with the new government and for this already very strong Chinese influence to be even greater. I think the difference we're going to see between this government and the last government, at the moment, the foreign policy rhetoric is the same. It's about Sri Lanka maintaining balance and equidistance as part of a non-aligned foreign policy. But I think we should treat that as mere official rhetoric and not take it particularly seriously. The reality, of course, is that Sri Lanka has been tilting towards China for some time.
Right.
It will tilt further. Under this government, I think there will be more problems in the bilateral relationships with India and with Western countries, perhaps with Australia, Japan, and others, which will, I think, only serve to increase the gap between Chinese influence and power in Sri Lanka and the role of other countries and powers in Sri Lanka.
That was very, very insightful, Razin. Thank you so much for sharing your insight with us, and thank you so much for being here today. And wish you all the very best on the book.
Thank you very much. Thank you very
You're
much.
Welcome. Thank you.